Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's a new experience. Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Lynn Norrington, and today, as usual, we have a fabulous show. I have a guest, and he is such an interesting fellow. I've only spoken to him a couple of minutes earlier today, but I'm reading his information on his website and bio. It's going to be a fascinating show that I've never really thought about with the clutter and clearing, and well, just stay tuned. For my new listeners, people that have are just finding the show, you're probably wondering what kind of show that who is this Rebecca Lynn Norrington and what is Reality Spirituality? Well, thanks for asking. This show, Reality Spirituality, is all about learning how to experience more happy moments on this journey. And what does that mean, happy moments, happy? The interesting thing is I've asked anybody that I ask, do you want to be happy? Would you like to be happy? Of course, the answer, I've never heard anyone tell me, no, they don't. But the real challenge is this happiness thing, this feeling happy, this contentment, this peace, this sitting and in your life or traveling through the life, through your life, this feeling, this higher vibration, if you will, this empowerment, this elevation, this evolution, all of this feeling is something that in every moment, we have a choice to either add to our happiness and or subtract from happiness. And what I've learned, because when I was younger, I only wanted two things. I wanted to, number one, live to my potential, and number two, I wanted to be happy. And what I've learned on this journey is that it's not about anything I do. It's not about achievement. It's not about collecting. It's not about finances. It's not about the relationship. It's not about the house on the hill. It's really about this internal contentment, this internal peace, this internal knowing, this internal trusting that everything is in order. And the universe is actually working for me, or the universe is embracing me and wants the best for me. That's the key. Whatever is happening, the universe wants the best for me. Now, it might not look like it when you've been disinherited by your mother. It might not feel like it when you have health issues and surgeries. It might not seem like it when there is a death in the family. It might not. The eyes are deceiving. The feelings are deceiving. Well, I don't want to say the feelings are deceiving. No, scratch that. What I mean is that whatever is happening, and I'm only going to speak for myself, whatever is happening in my life, no matter what it looks like, I know that it is there for a good reason. I know that my experience is there so that I can grow, that I can get to another stage, another connection, another solid connection with the universe. Everything that is happening is for my betterment. And when I realize that, and when I know that in every single second, in every single moment, then the journey becomes easier. Now, there's going to be a lot of trials. There's going to be a lot of ups and downs. There's going to be a lot of things that, quite frankly, if I was designing my journey, if I was designing this life, wouldn't happen. But the universe is designing it. The universe is creating this divine plan that everything that happens is for my betterment. And when you know that and you trust that and you relax and allow without resisting that the universe has your back, you will experience more happy moments. And that's what this show is about, how to perceive, how to act, how to behave in ways that are going to add to your happiness as opposed to subtract. Now, what do you do to subtract from happiness? Well, a lot of comparing, a lot of blaming other people for how you feel, a lot of expectations, a lot of comparing. The list goes on, and a lot of judgments. All of those things actually subtract from your happiness. And that's what the show is about, sharing what subtracts and what adds. But with that, I'm going to bring on my first guest, my only guest of the show. Sometimes I have more than one. And his name is Evan Michael Zislis. He likes to be known as Evan Z, which I love that. He's the author of Amazon International number one best-selling new book, Clutter-Free Revolution. Clutter-Free Revolution. Don't you love that? Coming to print by the end of this year. He's founder of the strategies consulting firm Intentional Solutions. I love the title. You know what? I'm just going to bring Evan on. Evan, welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm going to let you share with the audience other things that you, a little bit of your background. Welcome to the show, Evan.
Rebecca, thanks so much for having me. What a pleasure.
Thank you, thank you. Okay, so give my audience a little bit of your background, a little bit of your bio, so we know who you are, and then we're going to really delve deep into this interview, because you're a fascinating, fascinating energy, and I'm excited to have you share with my audience what you do and why and how you do it.
Okay, so my background, I'm an Army brat, and I grew up in a family with my dad is an Army pathologist. And we moved every 20 minutes when I was a kid. And that meant that there was a certain set of skills and adaptations that had to be developed in order to thrive in that environment. So when you're kind of bopping around from place to place, and I mean, one minute you're in North Carolina, the next minute you're in Texas, the next minute you're in Maryland, and then you're in Germany, South Korea, I mean, back and forth, we moved every 20 minutes. And so that lifestyle is going to resonate for readers who also shared that lifestyle for one reason or another, but also for people who thrive in transition, and some people really don't. So my background is as a teacher. I have a master's degree in curriculum development and experiential education, and I found that combining my aptitude for keeping things simple, getting things organized, and I'm a freak. I love interior design and everything about interior design. So it's always been something that I've been interested in and fascinated by and really good at. So when you combine all of those different elements, you get me, which is pretty cool. But I wrote a book about it because my business is helping people to simplify, so that they can focus on the things that matter most, and that is who we love, what we do, how and why we live, because everything else is just stuff. And I do it in five ways. So I help people with organization, and that's the stuff in your space, but it's also informational organization. I help people with operational systems, time and task management, content creation, and that's anything that's more of that curriculum development piece. So it could be program development, business development, copyright, those kinds of things, professional development. And then the last thing I do is professional networking, because you can't be good at everything. So having people in your arsenal of people who are really good at different kinds of things and being able to connect people in meaningful ways, that encompasses intentional solutions. So that's my professional practice.
You know what? That is such a fascinating beginning, because when I'm listening to you, and this is I've said this a lot, is that the universe, I'm just getting chills now, the universe is just preparing. It's like they are the best preparers for life, and the universe, just with your moving, you know, every 20 minutes, which I can't even imagine that experience or that journey that you've had to develop these kind of skills, and it's so important. Who would even think that something would? That's another thing that I like to say. There is always a benefit to whatever happens, and so you just talked about moving every 20 minutes, and some people would moan and be groan it, but you found what was good about it, and not only found it, that's basically who you are today, what you do helping other people today. And you're absolutely right. I'm going on and on with this only because I think it's fascinating what you do and how you came to do it. And then now your ability to help people, and you're right. It is change, transition, change for me. Is very, very, listen, I'm trying to declutter my closet for the last year. So I get what you're saying.
It shouldn't take that long.
Huh?
It shouldn't take that long.
I know, but it's the reason why it's taking that long is only because I'm just putting it off. There's more important things.
Well, that's exactly right. That's what people do. That's true. So Clutter-Free Revolution, I talk about my three-step method, and I have a three-step method that I use for absolutely everything. And I'm based out of Aspen, Colorado, so I work in 10,000 square foot homes, and I work on the other end of Aspen Valley. And with folks that have very little, so my Aspen clients kind of help fund my pro bono clients on the other end of the valley who really don't even have a living wage. So what I have found is that all of our stuff is the same. It's just scalable. And so what I've done is I've created a three-step method to help anybody. Great content is something that you can give to somebody and turn it into a curriculum that they can replicate a desirable outcome. But phenomenal, really exceptional curriculum should be universal. That means anybody should be able to apply the same principles and get the same result. So what I've done is I've figured out how to work with such a wide variety of people. And really I've applied this to people all over the world. In vastly different circumstances. So here's the three-step method, and the reason why I mentioned it.
Hold on, let me get a pen. Go.
You bet. And it's on my website too. It's myintentionalsolutions.com. Has it on the front page. So the first step is, before we even get to the first step, what is your ideal vision? That's how we start. That's Stephen Covey's highly effective habit. Number two, and that's start with...
Wait a minute. So what is your ideal vision? Is that what you said?
That's right. So if you were going to go on a backpacking trip, you might want to have some idea where you were going, because it points us in the right direction. So it kind of shows us what direction we want to start walking in. So if you were in your closet, for example, we'll just use that as an example because you brought it up. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to focus on your closet, you might get a snapshot in your brain, just a vision of what would you like this space to look like when you're all done? How would you want it to feel? So what this does is it gives us a starting point. It sort of gives us an end point in mind that we can work towards. Otherwise, we're kind of haphazardly hoping for the best, which is fine in some instances, but a lot of people don't want to take a year to organize their closet. They want to hurry up and get it done and move on with their life.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with the end in mind. That's the ideal vision, and the book kind of talks you through how to do that in more detail. But that's where we start. And then step one is, how can we make this easier? So how can we simplify this?
I mean,
usually
step
that's
two.
The forest. Yeah. No, this is step one.
Oh, this is all
start,
step one. Okay. Visualize
and
make it easy. Okay, go ahead.
The ideal vision is before we even start step one. Right?
Mm,
so this is just
okay,
planning. And then when we get into implementation, we step one is simplify. How can we simplify this? How can we get this down to really just the bare essentials of what we're trying to do? That's the forest through the trees effect. Usually this means that there's so much in front of us we can't even see what we're looking at. So we have to remove the things that are not essential. We do that in four ways. What's trash? What's recyclable? What's thriftable or giftable? And what's consignable? I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. These are just
right.
Four steps to help keep you on track. What's trash? What can be recycled? What can be thrifted or gifted? And what can be consigned, sold, or traded? Those are things that have value that I like to recoup some of that value and not just throw things away, right?
Mm.
So that's step one, simplify. So there's three steps and four sub-steps for each step. So for the first step, simplify, the four sub-steps are trash, recycle, thrift or gift, consign, sell, or trade. Does that make sense?
Mm, yes, it does.
Great. So step two is once we've eliminated everything that is not essential and we're left over with everything that we love, these are things that support who we want to be in this lifetime and what we want to do. So what that means is as we're scrutinizing every little thing in our closet, we're asking ourselves, does this support who I want to be and what I want to do? And if it doesn't, it goes away. So when we, in step two is clarify. We need clarity. The way we get clarity is reorganize. That's step two is clarity. We do that in four ways, four sub-steps. First one is like things together. We know this, but we don't do it. We should do it. Like things together so that things are easy to find. Easy to find usually means that it's in a transparent container or it's labeled so that I can find it and I know where it goes. I know where to put it back.
Mm.
Sub-step three, so like things together, easy to find, easy to reach. This is the convenience factor, but out of the way, that's the clutter factor, right? So like things together, easy to easy to find, which usually means I can see it, or has a label of some kind. Easy to reach, which is convenient, but out of the way. So easy to reach, but out of the way, close enough, but not too close. So how do I know where to put anything? So I have this little sub formula. Proximity equals urgency. Tell me what that means to you.
Proximity equals urgency.
That's right.
Proximity means something that I need, and I need it often. And it's
correct.
Valuable to me in my life.
You got it. So the more urgently I'm going to need something, the closer it should be. So proximal is the closeness, and urgent is how frequent, right? So if I need something urgently, it should be pretty close and pretty easy to get to. That means don't put your first aid kit on the bottom of your backpack if you're taking it. You know? When I need my first, don't put your bear spray on the bottom of the backpack. If the bear is attacking me, I want to be able to reach my bear spray.
Yeah, like, excuse me, Mr. Bear, can you hold on a second? I've got to get my bear spray. Just hold,
right.
Hold. Don't slap
just
me with that
second.
Paw yet.
If
got
you're
it.
In line at the airport for TSA, don't put your passport at the bottom of your stuff. Have it on top. So that's proximity equals urgency. So this framework, step two, gives us a little bit of parameters for how do I organize? Everybody knows that they should have an organized closet, but how do I do it? So this shows you, gives you a little bit of parameters on how to organize, and it's very quick. So it gives you something, a touch point, so that you can say, okay, where am I at? Okay, like things together. I'm going to put like things together. I know I need to organize and label those like things all in the same way. And then I need to make sure that things are convenient and not too close. So that's proximity equals urgency. Step three, so we have simplify is step one. clarify is step two, inspire is step three, because everything it requires maintenance. Everything requires maintenance, whether it's a high-performance automobile or fitness for our bodies, working with our loved ones in relationships, everything requires maintenance, and so does this. So step three is inspire, and that means bringing this to life with style and vibrancy. In our closets or in our physical spaces, those four sub-steps are, what is the aesthetic? How does it look and feel? Does it make me feel good to look at this space? That's where decor comes in. That's the intentional interiors. That's the design piece, right? So what's the aesthetic? Does it function? Is it flexible? And does it suit my personal preferences? What's my lifestyle? So those are the four sub-steps for inspire. So when you combine those, it enables us to solve any problem, whether it's the stuff in your space or some complex concept. If you're trying to use this to repair your relationship, or if you're trying to build a business, or if you're trying to create a program, these three steps are absolutely universal, and that's the coolest part. We start with the stuff in our space. So we say clutter-free revolution. The book is about how do you simplify your stuff and organize your life. But those same three steps, those three steps that we use in my book can also be applied to absolutely anything else where you feel stuck in your life, which is pretty cool, I think.
You know, I'm listening to you very intently, and I'm and my mind is wandering to my life and my experiences. And first of all, earlier you said we all don't are experts in everything, and so that's why we need help with things. And I totally agree. There are some things that I am just, listen, I could do them, but it's not really me. It's not really a fit. So what I've learned is that things that I don't do, or it doesn't come natural to me, then definitely I need help with that. And I have a 9-to-5, Evan, and I work in an office where, and I'm just throwing this out, where
sure.
you can rip through that office, my dear. There are offices with paper so high, and I'm not joking. Paper, there is paper on every space of desks, and sometimes it's piled up a foot in certain areas, and it's piled up on chairs, and it's piled up on desks, and I've watched it over the years, and there are people that are like that, which, no judgments here. But they're not going to change. I get what you're saying, because their office has been clean. You know, they've moved and they've thrown things away, and then in another month, another 2 months, another 3 months, actually a lot less than that, this is just who they are.
Which is fine. That's why I don't knock on doors. If you think there's right, that's right. If you know somebody who's in recovery for a substance abuse problem, knocking on their door and asking to clean up their desk is not the best approach, because they don't perceive there's a problem.
Yeah.
As soon as somebody says something's not working for me, this isn't quite right. People come to me all the time and they say, look, Ev, I read your column in the Aspen Times twice a month, and I like your stuff. I don't really have a clutter problem, but I'm really struggling in my personal life, or I can't keep a thought in my head, or I really stink at time and task management, and things are slipping through the cracks, or those kinds of things. I don't really have a clutter problem. My first question, every single time, is what does this space look like that you're working in? And if they're working in an immaculate space, it's a different conversation, but most of them are not. Most of them are working in cluttered spaces. And there's a tangible impact between the space that you're working in and how well we're able to function as human beings. So you know this to be true. When you go into a hotel room, there is a you talked about peace and contentment associated with happiness, and I wrote that down when you said it. There is a peace in stepping into a space that is clutter-free. That is an invitation for you to focus on and become inspired by what you're working on right now. When you are working in a space, and I'm just talking about the office space where your 9-to-5 is.
Sure.
When you are working in clutter, your brain has a hard time focusing on the thing in front of you that you're supposed to be focused and inspired by in this moment. And it's going to affect the quality of your work. Now, I'm a creative. People think I'm a type A neat freak, and I'm not. I'm a creative. So I understand people who thrive in environments that are a little bit messy. And there are certain circumstances where I think that that's probably true. But for most of us, most of the time, trying to work in a cluttered environment is going to affect not only your brain and your brain's ability to focus, but your ability to make those transitions from one task to another in a way that doesn't feel cumbersome. So this work is not about tidying up. This work is about clearing the cluttered path to the life you seek. And that's important because how we organize and how we, the environments that we occupy have tangible impact on the rest of our lives. It impacts our health. It impacts our eating habits. It impacts our motivation to get out, to feel inspired to fitness and exercise. It impacts the relationships that we have with the people around us and their relationships to us. It impacts our compulsive behaviors if we're shop therapy kind of people and we just want to feel good right now so we go shopping. All of these things have a big impact on how we keep our space. So the reason why I say simplify your stuff, organize your life, save the world is because what we do matters.
Yeah.
And when we can bring some intention to what we do and how we live, it's going to have an impact on the global solution outside of our own homes, outside of our own households, outside of our own relationships with the people in our life. What we do matters, and it's going to have an impact outside of our own space, outside of our own, you know, immediate world, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with you there. It does start with the individual, and regardless of what they're doing, whether they're angry at somebody that just cut them off or whether they are sitting in peace and being, you know, and feeling very full and grateful for this life that they're, the gift of life that they are experiencing, that definitely impacts the whole world. So I totally get that. And I really appreciate the fact that you explained that there are one of the things that I don't really like to do is just generalize and talk about. I definitely talk about what my challenges are, but I can't really pretend to know what anybody else is going through or feeling because I'm just not in their skin. But you said something, and I'm trying to the hotel room. And walking in and having a feeling that everything is not cluttered or just open spaces. And it's the same kind of, for me, it's the same feeling after I clear out a closet or clean my car or I just had my windows cleaned yesterday or windows cleaned in the house. And there is a feeling of, I can't even describe it. My words are not, I don't have the words, but it feels really good. It feels really, really good.
That's entire peace. So when you know this to be true, it's easier to keep a clean kitchen clean.
Yes.
Because you're inspired to keep it clean.
Yes.
When we let ourselves go and when we let things go, it's harder. That whole spring clean thing should be happening on a weekly basis. And then it just becomes a part of who you are. And you become inspired to that maintenance.
Habit.
That's health and wellness, right? That perpetuates
yes.
that happiness. It sets the stage for happiness. When we, you know, stack the odds in our favor with little habits incrementally all along the work week. nothing becomes this overwhelming burden. It just becomes a part of who we are. So I'll give you a great example. My daughter is 5 years old, and she's a precocious little monkey, I tell you.
But I love
we have to, since she's 3 years old, she knows that she cleans her room every night before bed. Now, first of all, she doesn't have a ton of stuff. We call her toys on a regular enough basis so that she doesn't have this big, overwhelming space to clean up every night. She has her toys that she loves, and the ones that she doesn't love, she donates to other kids in the neighborhood. And she knows that anything that's left on the floor, when I come in to tuck her in, is going to get thrifted and given away philanthropically to other kids in our valley. And she knows this. And she's great at, she's really good at saying, I'm finished with this, Daddy, let's share this with somebody else. But it's become part of the culture of our household. She knows about philanthropy. And she knows that it's important to go to sleep in a space that is clutter-free, because that will be conducive to waking up fresh in the morning. She's not stepping over things when she wakes up the next day. It's a fresh start, and that's an inspirational kind of example of doing some of that maintenance. So a lot of what I talk about in the book are, what are the systems that you can incorporate in your day-to-day life that help to keep this pretty manageable so that you don't ever feel like it's this big, overwhelming chore? It just becomes a part of who you are.
Well, you know what? It's funny. There's been some times when I've had a guest on my show, and I said, you know what, I don't really know, because I don't even know how we connected Facebook. I really don't know specifically, but this show today is really for me. Thank you. Yeah, and I'm really not a clutter. If you came into my home, it's very, very clean, but there are some things, I have to say, papers, especially in my studio, papers that I haven't filed away, and they've been there for let me just be honest, sitting on the floor, haven't been filed away, I give it over a month. And so this
that's a metaphor. Clutter is a metaphor. I go into some of these homes that I go, these monster homes that I go into, Aspen, I go in and it's pristine. It is absolutely immaculate. And I think to myself, oh, my God, this person thinks I'm going to help them. I'm about to be exposed as a fraud. What am I going to do for this person? And then they start opening cabinets, or they start opening closets, or they start opening basement doors and attics and storage spaces, or their home office and the piles of paper on their desk. And the disorganization of their files. We all have clutter. We all have it. Everybody has it. And for the ones that don't have it, have some measure of mental clutter. So it's just a metaphor. So when you said, and I interrupted you. I cut you off.
No.
But I just wanted to. It's very scalable. This phenomenon of clutter is scalable. So some people are hoarders. The Dr. Melva Green, who's the expert doctor, psychiatrist on the show, the television show Hoarders, wrote the foreword to my book, Clutter-Free Revolution. This is absolutely a scalable issue. If you don't have to have boxes piled up to the ceiling in order to have clutter. So it's important for people to recognize that you can apply simple strategies to any measure of clutter that you've got, even if it's just a couple of piles in your home office that you just haven't gotten to in a while.
Well, what you're talking about, at least for me, what I'm hearing and seeing and is that the habit of, and for me, there are habits of, okay, I'm really into doing what I'm inspired, and if I'm not inspired to picking, obviously I haven't been inspired to picking up these little, it's probably about 20 pieces of paper, all different types of paper, and just not inspired to do it yet, I'm really okay with that. But in other words, I'm saying, okay, the universe is, in other words, the universe isn't judging me. Why am I judging me that I have 20 pieces of paper on the floor in my studio? But I'm also being, there's a shift listening to you and getting what you mean, and there's a shift of, okay, let's streamline all of this. Because I really get less. I don't need all of this stuff. Not only do I not need it, I don't want it. I want to be able, I like the fact that you came on with the moving every 20 minutes, and that's, it's a really great concept. I don't need this stuff, because what I do is when I clean out is, have I used this in the last year? Have I used this? Have I worn this? And it's not, I always give it away, and or if it's trash, it goes into the trash. But I don't need all of this stuff. I really don't. Don't want it.
So I took a bike trip from where I live in Colorado all the way to San Francisco, and I went the long way. I did this big horseshoe, and it was like 2,400 miles in 7 weeks on my bike. And I had a bob trailer, a little one-wheel trailer behind my bike that I carried, everything that I needed for that trip. And when you take a trip like that, I crossed the Continental Divide 10 times. And so when you take a trip like that, anything that you don't absolutely need becomes a liability, and it makes you hypersensitive to the stuff in your life. And what do we really need to be happy? We need so little. It's so little to be happy. And now I really think that happiness is a choice. And it's not what we do. It's not what we say we do. It's not how we feel. I think happiness is just a choice. We just, in spite of anything, you know, whether or not we're diagnosed with cancer, or we wake up, or we've just won the Olympics, or we're in tip-top shape, or we're going through a really ugly, nasty divorce, or things are just gone to hell, I think happiness is a choice, and that's really the only thing that we have control over, is
right.
What we choose to believe. And you were the one that shifted my perspective on happiness when I was listening to a show recently where you were talking about expectation, and expectation is the root of unhappiness. And so I have shifted in my what I expect. And I think that there's a sense of entitlement around the word expectation. And I'm really shifting around that. So that's the one thing that I'm working on. But I really feel like happiness, if happiness is a choice, we can choose to shift what our perspective of what we need to be happy. When you say, I really just don't need this, if we can start to see things as a liability when they don't serve who we want to be and what we want to do, if looking at things through that filter helps us to see, I really just don't need this to be happy, and somebody else could probably benefit from the use of this item. That's the save the world piece. So on the cover of my book, is a pair of old tennis shoes. It's not just an arbitrary image. We all have a pair of shoes that we're not using regularly. And there's somebody out there walking around barefoot who could benefit from the use of those shoes. So when we shift and we look at the things that we own through that filter, what do I need to be happy? I really don't need this to be happy. Could somebody else improve their level of happiness with the use of this item? And now we get out of that stagnation. You know, I like to think I'm a river person. I'm a whitewater kayaker. And so I understand how the river flow helps to maintain the health and wellness of a river system, the ecosystem around that river. When things just stagnate, they tend to rot. So when we can flush those things out, it improves the health and wellness of that ecosystem. And it's true for our closets as well. So when we can go through and see, this thing has just stagnated too long and it's got to get moved. I mean, we've got to move these things out. We've got to rearrange the furniture in the living room from time to time so that things don't stagnate. And then we become inspired with a new perspective. We refresh that space. We bring it to life again. So when you say, I just don't need this to be happy, let's do that in all areas of our life. Does that make sense?
Listening, it's so interesting. Like I said, I really feel like this, what you're bringing me was really meant for me, especially at this, especially at this specific time. Two questions. One I had about when you were talking about your daughter, little five-year-old, little baby, little angel. So my question is this, because I have this thing about children and making sure that their spirits are not, I don't want to use the word broken or stifled, or their spirit,
yeah.
You know, in other words, they're allowed to be themselves. So my question, and you don't even have to, well, let me just ask it anyway. So is it her nature to put things away, or is it after what she's learned from you to put things away?
I don't know if I can answer that. That's a nature versus nurture question. I think that there's probably, as an educator, and coming from that background of teaching, I used to teach 7th grade at Aspen Middle School, so coming from that environment, how much of what we do is influencing young people to be themselves in a way that
yes.
is that helps to bring out their nature versus taught to them and inspires who they become. That I think it's probably a combination of those two things. I think that the art of organization, I think it's a skill set that is mostly learned. I think that some people come into the world with an innate ability, an inherent intrinsic ability to organize things in a way that makes sense to their brain. I think most of us, I don't think that my daughter came into the world with that. I don't think I came into the world with that. It was something that I learned over 40 years that I learned those systems. My room, my bedroom, and my parents can tell you this, my bedroom when I was a kid was trashed. I mean, I could see everything. I prided myself that I could stand on my bed and look out on the expanse of my bedroom and see everything I owned on the floor. So I didn't come into the world with this.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because when I was in my parents' home, all of my things were on the floor, and I just it was just, and they, you know, they fussed about it, nagged about it, but I just thought that's who I was. But as soon as I moved out into my own place, I was very, very, the things I didn't do at home, I was very neat. And now I'm just a little combination of both. But so I just wanted to ask about that, because children are who they are when they leave you. When they're under your roof, I'm just talking about, you know, me and my son, they, you know, of course, my son had to clean, you know, well, actually, I never gave him any rules to do any cleaning. I said, you, this is your room. You know, live in it however way you want to live in it. And now, I just didn't have any rules for his room, specifically his room. And now he's with his own apartment in New York and complaining about his roommate being messy. And that's exactly who he was when he was younger.
This is my take on that. I do a lot of work around executive function. And executive function is the part of your brain in your prefrontal cortex. It's like the air traffic control tower, or the CEO of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it does is it enables you to integrate new information with old information. It helps you to focus. It helps you to discern. It helps you to have judgment in a way that helps you to make decisions that feel like informed decisions. So I know that in cluttered environments, executive function is diminished.
Mm.
So what I want to do is I want to give her some skills early in life that give her the ability to organize if she so chooses,
mm-hmm.
so that later in life she can decide if she wants to be messy, she can be messy. If she wants to be organized, she will know how to do that. She will know how to do that for herself. So what I want to do is I want to set her up for success if she chooses that for herself. Now, there's going to be a point, now, and I'm not naive about this, when she hits middle school, about, she's gonna become a little bit more independent than she is now, and we're going to be able to establish that kind of relationship that you had with your son, where you say, look, it's your room, go do whatever you want to do. But when I say that to her, I want to do it under the auspices that she has a choice on what she wants to do. It's like you wouldn't give your keys, the keys to the car to your son without teaching him how to drive first.
Right,
you
right.
Say,
well, you're saying something
you're
really
nuts.
Right, important is giving people choices. People can, even with the teaching the classes about happiness, even that, all I'm doing is offering them choices of what, of how to look at a situation, same situation, just another way. I love that. Yeah, giving people choices.
And this is what I know developmentally about kids.
Mm-hmm.
The more space, the more area people that children have to play in, mm-hmm. the more vibrantly they will play. The more they will get out of that play developmentally. So what invariably what ends up happening in American households, and I know because I'm in them, is that kids have too many toys for the amount of space that they're playing in, and it hampers their playing. It dampens their playing. It dampers what they're able to get out of, developmentally get out of, that play. So what I would rather is my daughter to have this big, wide-open, expansive area to play in with fewer toys. So I'm setting that up for her because I know developmentally it's better for her. And what I'm finding is that her personality, her natural way of being, is blossoming in that environment. She doesn't have, and I work with families who have challenges with their kids, and invariably a lot of them have a lot of clutter. Those are not environments that are conducive to calm, right? So we want to empower the households in this country with environments that help to naturally empower kids with the ability to get calm, to have this sense of peace, to have these spaces that are that inspire, okay, I can settle. And I'm not just in this frantic, cluttered, sort of agitating environment. And I don't know if you've been in some of those spaces. I don't know if you've got friends that just live in clutter all the time. Those
yes.
are agitating.
My mother is one of them.
So there you go. So that agitation is not conducive to calm. And
no,
when we're raising kids.
Yeah, and I can say that my mother is one of them. She's one of the hoarders, and she's always got to buy something. But the thing is, I've accepted her. It used to be a real problem to me, and I used to actually clean out her home. When my father was alive, I would get in their closets and throw and go to and take stuff that was just trash and junk, and they moved from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. They had cans that were 15 years old with expiration dates that were 30 years old, and just I used to pile trunks of cars and throwing, and they really got upset with me because number one, they're comfortable with that. It would be uncomfortable if I went in my, and I learned it the hard way. I have to say, I learned it the hard way. It would be uncomfortable if I went in there and cleaned everything out, because I've done it more than once, even for her, because of the reasons that you said. But no, the clutter, they need the clutter.
Let's talk about aging parents.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
aging parents.
So
the
baby boomer generation is getting to a point now where they are, whether they're retiring or rewiring because they still have to work, and they would like to retire, or they're downsizing for one reason or another. The baby boomer population is probably my biggest clientele, or ends up being. Their children are actually the ones that call me to do the work in their spaces. But I always end up working in their parents' homes because people are getting to the age where it's too difficult to go through that stuff and declutter. It's overwhelming. They have emotional attachment to things. There's a lot of guilt associated with heirlooms that they've been schlepping around for the last, 60 years or whatever. So that population needs help with this. They need support, and sometimes it's like teaching your teenager how to drive. Sometimes one person removed helps to set you up for more success when you're working with that population, because it's too close. If you're trying to help your parents with that stuff, sometimes they're less likely to listen to you than they would an outside expert who does this for a living. But if we can empower families across the country with a simple method on how to do this that is tried and true, it's worked for hundreds and thousands of families around the country in exactly the same circumstances, because all of our space is the same, all of our stuff is the same. I'm the one going through those storage units, and I know that your storage unit looks exactly like his storage unit, it looks exactly like her storage. We all have the same stuff. It's all the same. So if we can empower our parents, our aging parents, and then when we start getting into, the end of life, whether it's dementia or cancer or hospice, we need to be able to create spaces that are conducive to rest and healing and visiting and reconnecting with those family members. We don't want to have to be at the end of life visiting with our aging families in environments that are not conducive to connection, right?
Well, let me just stop you there, because I've experienced the dementia with my dad. He actually died in 2008. And the same thing with my dad and the same thing with my mother. And what I've learned, because I've done both, and what I had to do, and I totally get what you mean, I totally get it, but what I've had to do is let go, because what I was trying to do was control my parents, control their household, control what I thought. My intentions were good, great, what I thought was best for them. And I get what you're saying. If I would be one of the people that said, yep, Evan, you're right, it needs to be clutter-free. But as far as me getting into their life and trying to change in that household, it was a big problem. And it was only because I'm trying to control them. Control with love, intentions good. No, have to accept, have to let it go. It was one of the hardest lessons I had to get. It really was. And even to this day, I let her allow her to be herself. She's in her last stages. If this woman wants to buy, don't complain about it. If this woman wants to buy crap every single day that she doesn't need, listen to this. I even have a video, Evan, when I was visiting her, and we couldn't even get into the freezer. She had two freezer compartments in her refrigerator. You can't even get anything in the freezer because it's so stuffed and it's so packed. I just had to start laughing about it. I just have to laugh about it and let her be her. She would bother her if I did anything other than that.
Well, my biggest point on that is the safety issue. People need to be able to get around their spaces safely.
I get it. My father fell maybe two or three times in the house, in the garage. But I'm just as an experience, I'm a little bit older than you. I'm just letting you know. Yeah, I can, it is about me controlling, even with good intentions, even if he falls. Listen, I cannot stop or prevent anything that the universe has planned or has destined. I had to accept all of that. Even now, I've asked her to live with me. She doesn't want to live with me, but she. In other words, I can't change her. I can't try to. That's just my thing.
Sure.
And I
well,
now I want to ask
family,
you a question.
I think every family is different.
Yes.
Everyone's
exactly.
experience is different. I get a lot of people asking me for help with that. And I've had some measure of success working with those families, using a simple system, like looking in their spaces and helping them to accommodate their parents in a way that feels like their parents feel accommodated. Like their parents are saying, like, so if somebody was telling you, no, I want it to be the way I want it, how can we work around what they're asking for and subtly and discreetly help set them up for success? So I do that for a living, and I've had some success with that, working in their spaces in order to try to give everybody what they're asking for and maintain some measure of safety and tranquility in a space where there's some agitation. I agree with you completely, absolutely. At the end of life, we should absolutely try to accommodate people in the way that feels best to that family and that household. And
well, you know, you said it earlier, and you said having someone else come in. My mother would definitely entertain you and have you come in and have you, you do make the suggestions, but coming from me, hell no. So
right.
I get what that's what I was
exactly
saying.
Right.
I can't do it,
that's
but somebody
right.
else could probably go in there and assist her with that. But we're coming to the end of the hour. I cannot believe it. I wanted to ask you this question really quickly. Because this is, what about items that are quote unquote sentimental? What the
sure.
heck? What do I do with that?
Okay, so things are sentimental, and I'm going to talk quickly just because we're out of time. Things are sentimental for a variety of reasons, because they were gifted to us. We inherited them from someone. Something is associated with a wish that either did not come to fruition, or it came to fruition and we want to hold on to that time. We should not get rid of the things that give us joy. If something brings us happiness, I just want to make sure that we are honoring that memory in a way that is really honoring. So don't have something stuffed into a box in the bottom of your basement if this is something that you treasure. Let's have those things out so that we can reflect on them and enjoy them. I'm not a proponent of getting rid of every little thing. And keep the things and celebrate the things that have sentimental value. If something has lost its value and really just doesn't really have that much meaning anymore, if you're really just holding on to something because you feel guilty getting rid of it, that's different. If something was gifted to you and I get this one all the time, if something is gifted to you, then it was a gift. It's the thought that counts.
Mm-hmm.
You reciprocated that thought with a thought of your own, saying thank you. It was an acknowledgement of appreciation, and the circle has come, or the intention has come full circle. Someone gifted you with something. It was the thought that counts. You acknowledged that with your own appreciation, and it's come full circle. The item is irrelevant.
Right. Right,
because
the energy that was exchanged with the gift and the giving. Yes, you're right.
So if you feel guilty, don't. Either pass it along, re-gift it, give it back to the person because you tell them, hey, look, I'm in this process of decluttering my life and I wanted to include you in this process and I thought enough of you to include you in this process. Would you like this item back? Or shall I just send it off down the river to the next person? I talk about guilt and how to use those things in my book. So how do you have those conversations? You know, how do you let go of things that you have sentimental value with that really are just not serving you anymore? Or how do you celebrate the things that really do have authentic value? Those are all things that I talk about in the book.
Well, I love that. Let me just throw this in. I've been saving my son's teeth and his baby clothes, so he's 30 right now, so there you go. And all of his drawings from first and second grade.
If you love those things and you enjoy
them, I love them. I can't get rid of
them.
I love them.
Don't get rid of them. I would never suggest that you do. What I would suggest is that you display them in a way that is conducive to honoring those things.
Oh, no, there's
get
too many.
Get a nice portfolio.
Oh, no,
frame,
no, no, no,
frame,
no. Listen, we're going to go a little bit over the hour. His teeth are not displayable. I mean, let me step back and stop saying no, 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 because I totally understand what you're saying. And you've actually given me a thought to, are some of the things that I have of his, are they displayable? Some are and some aren't. I mean, this house, my house, my office, you would think I have 100 children. I only have one. He's displayed all over the house.
Did you ever see the movie Meet the Fockers with Dustin Hoffman and Barbara Streisand and Ben Stiller? It was the sequel to Meet the Parents.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing it, but I don't remember specifically what it's
There's
about.
There's one scene. It's exactly what you're describing. There's one scene where Barbara Streisand and Dustin Hoffman, who are these hippies in Miami, are the main character's parents, and they have kept all of his stuff, and they made, his name is Gaylord, and so they did a display on the one giant wall in their home called the Wall of Gaylord, and it's like his jock strap framed, right, and his, from when he was a teenager, and his, like, his wrestling singlet and his, like, ninth place ribbon from fifth grade track and field or whatever it was. So,
yeah,
like, it's just, it's a, I would say, a satire in what you're describing.
If you get enjoyment from
keeping those things and you've got the room for it, go for it. It's fine.
Listen, I have a museum. I have a museum for my son. He's got a museum here, and I have a museum for my stuff. When I had my 50th birthday, one of the displays was the Museum of Rebecca Lynn Norrington. You should see what I had on there. I had my diary from when I was 12 years old. I had a dress that I couldn't wear anymore. I had my wedding shoes. I mean, yeah, I like it. I think it's kind of fun, but displaying it, yeah. But listen, please share with my audience, this is still being recorded, how they can find you, your
Great.
Programs that you are your book and your programs that you're coming, that you are going to be having in a couple of weeks, please share.
Okay. So the book right now is available as an ebook on Amazon. It was a number one bestseller in 8 countries, including the United States, in its first week out, and it has held its bestseller status, and I'm so grateful for how it was received. So that is available at Amazon. It's called Clutter Free Revolution, and simplify your stuff, organize your life, save the world. So that's the name of the book. That book will be coming out with a new foreword by Dr. Melva Green from the television show Hoarders. It's in support of the Hahn Foundation, which is a philanthropic partnership with the Hahn Foundation, and that's Goldie Hahn organization, which is a phenomenal organization. They do world-class stuff. So it's also a philanthropic mechanism, the book. $1 for every book sold will go to support their organization. The book will be coming out in print with more stuff than what's in the ebook later this year. It'll probably be closer to Thanksgiving is when the print book will come out, but it will be available for pre-orders and pre-sales. And Clutter Free Revolution Academy, which is a companion to the book, is a 12-week program. It's a telecourse. We will talk twice a week via telephone for an hour. We're going to go through every single room of your home. We're going to talk about aging parents. We're going to talk about conflict resolution in your household, how to have these conversations with people in your home, and everything that you need. There's going to be a private group on Facebook where you can download more materials and be inspired by other people who are going through this process as well. There'll be before and after pictures. There will be inspiration boards and so on and so forth. So clutterfreerevolution.com. is kind of the one-stop shop for everything related to this. And if you go to clutterfreerevolution.com, you'll get all the information that you need.
I love it. Now that you're reminding me, the last visit I had with my mom, maybe it was a couple visits ago, I actually posted these pictures on Facebook of her service porch. It was so cluttered. I was there probably about 2 hours of a small little service porch, and you just reminded me. I'm going to have to share those pictures with you from my Facebook. Yeah, Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. And I loved your topic. It's something that I don't really hear people talking about. And I love the concept. I love the intention. And I'm telling you right now, I have a project. I was going to sit on my butt doing nothing today, and now I have something to do. Thank you so much.
Let me know how it goes. Let me know how it goes. Okay. And call me if you
want
to.
Thank you so much for being a part of the show. I really appreciate you, Evan. Thank you.
What a pleasure, Rebecca. Thanks so much. Please stay.
Will do, will do. And so, everyone, thank you so much for listening to Reality Spirituality. The show is heard every Saturday and Sunday, 7 a.m. And if you like more information on the programs that I offer, you can go to my website at RebeccaNorrington.com, RebeccaNorrington.com. And also, you can email me at info@RebeccaNorrington, my book, Reality Spirituality, The Truth About Happiness, a hard copy. The hardcover is limited edition, so they only have a few left because the second edition is coming out sometime this year, and that's going to be with I'm really excited about that. Also, go to Reality Spirituality Facebook page and like Reality Spirituality. I want to remind you, my dear audience, who you are. You are a physical extension of the universe. You are the universe. You're always changing. You're always growing. You're always evolving. Love is patient, and love is kind. Be kind and be patient to yourself. Be your own best friend. Remember, you cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. That's my favorite quote from Abraham. You cannot have a happy ending to an unhappy journey. Thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to Reality Spirituality. Talk to you again next week.
Yeah. Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah.
Reality Spirituality.
It's the newest spirit.
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Reality Spirituality.
You got a question for RLM?
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
Reality Spirituality.
Oh, now we get real.
Get real.
Good now.
Get real good.
Now, let's go.